Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. My first thing I want to say is Happy New Year. We're finally past that little lump precipice that we've got to get across. And again, biblically, I think there's 18 references to starting new. So that we were reading about. So my name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Steve Tyson.
Pat Park.
Charlie Loferno.
Julie Loferno.
And as you heard, Representative Steve Tyson is here. We've asked him to come aboard. And again, Steve, thank you very much for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Can you fill us in on some of the things that happened in the North Carolina legislature this year? What were some of the highlights?
Well, I would say there were a lot of good things that happened, and I wish that I had brought my list, but I did not. So I'm going to try to pull some of them from out of my head. But one of the most critical things, I think, and it showed that the Republican-led legislature can act and can act quickly when it's needed, and that was on Arenas Law, where you had someone that had been arrested, I can't remember how many times, 70. 50, it doesn't matter, but they had been repeatedly arrested, put back on the street with no bail. And unfortunately, the last time that he was released, he took the life of a beautiful young lady from Ukraine that had came to the United States as a refugee and was looking forward to building a life here. She was had a boyfriend, a close boyfriend, and was looking forward, I think, to live in the American dream, and that was taken from you. And we've seen that happen more and more, but we decided in North Carolina enough is enough. So we put Arenas Law, did a number of things, but probably the most important is it's going to make people that repeat felons, it's going to not allow them to get out of jail.
And until
they have their court.
As you're implying there, I think with the magistrates or whatever else, there's more responsibility in how they act.
Yeah, it took some of the, discretion away from magistrates to where
it
came to bail. And I'm going to jump right in because I know somebody's going to ask me the question. I'll jump right into one of the things we did not do, and that was get a budget. And if you will allow me to take a few minutes, I'll just give you my point of view. And I know Senator Brinson was on last week, and he probably doesn't necessarily see it like this. But the Republican legislature, we had our differences in the House and the Senate. The House felt like that we had just produced a better budget. And a lot of people seem to agree with that, including some in the Senate who will remain unknown at this time.
And a number of people here, by the way.
Okay. But, the teachers certainly approved our budget better. And let's keep in mind that 60% of the state budget goes toward education, not all towards K through 12. Okay. I think that's like 47%. But you've got community colleges, the instructors there in the university system. And also the governor is on record as of just a few days ago of saying that he would support and sign the House budget. The biggest difference, and there's a couple of structural differences that I think could be worked through on a few policy things. I won't even bring them up, but is on teacher pay. And, it's a fact. You can't debate the facts that North Carolina invests less in K through 12 than any other state. There may be one other state exception. It depends on the data that you look at. So we rank like number 49th. Now, the House budget would have, in addition to reducing taxes, because that was a given, they're already reduced. They went from 425 to 399. That was built into past law. But it would give us a beginning teacher pay, which is what the Department of Public Instruction says that their biggest problem is recruiting teachers, okay, beginning teachers. Number one, there's a shortage of them. Not as many young people are going into the teaching field as they were in years past. So it's more competitive, and we're competing particularly with the states around us, Virginia, Tennessee, South Carolina, Georgia, et cetera. And so our budget would have given us the highest beginning teacher starting salaries of any state in the Southeast that we compete against. Obviously, we're not competing against New York and California and New Jersey and all that. So unfortunately, that led to a standoff between the House and the Senate, so we did not get a budget passed, which also meant that there were no salary increases for other state employees that would have in either budget, the state House or the Senate budget.
Steve, what did the Senate want?
Well, the Senate wanted to increase the amount of tax decrease. They wanted to accelerate it, okay? And our numbers, and I don't know how you argue with the numbers, because our numbers came from the fiscal research people, and you know, that work for the legislature. In other words, they're the ones with the degrees in economics and accounting and, you know, tax, you know, policy and stuff that give us our forecast on what revenue is going to be based on this tax. Now, you know, it's a game that they're pretty good in. It's not an exact science, because nobody knows, you know, 6 months out how the economy is going to be doing. But the data that they showed us with the increased accelerated rate of tax, you know, decreases would have put us in a deficit, which would have meant that we would have had to freeze spending or pull money from
the
some
reserves.
Of our reserve funds, yeah. We didn't think like that was needed, because we've already got a tax, you know, decrease factored in. We're already probably the lowest taxed in the Southeast, you know, which is where we're competing. Now, I say that with a caveat, because I've looked at some of this data, but yes, Tennessee doesn't have a state income tax. Yes, Florida doesn't have a state income tax. Texas doesn't. A few other states that don't. But when you look at their global tax structure, when you look at their property tax, you know, amount, when you look at some of them gas tax, some of them's higher than ours, and if you look at their
Sales tax.
You know, when you take a state like Florida that has a sales tax, I don't know, what is it, a half cent more than ours or something like that? Think of all the sales tax that comes out of Florida with the hundreds, if not thousands, of miles of beach property that they have, and all the tourism that they have that pay sales tax that don't live there. I mean, they just got an advantage. With Texas, you know, they've got some advantage too. With Tennessee, I haven't really studied their tax structure, so I'm not sure how they go without a personal income tax. But we know this: all states provide essentially the same services. Education, you have to have roads, you have to have public health services, public social services, court systems. You know, you have law enforcement and so, I mean, we all have the same. So a state like Tennessee is getting that money from somewhere other than, you know, personal income tax if they don't have one. Maybe their corporate income tax is higher than ours. I do say that ours is the lowest, I think, corporate income tax rate of any state that has one. There's a few that don't have them, but, and that's, well, I'll leave it at that.
And then I think the other issues that we were aware of was, again, putting a toll on the ferry system. And there was another crazy issue that the Senate had wanted to build or support building a new hospital that questionable.
You know, and I think that's something that there could be some negotiation on and could eventually happen. The UNC Healthcare Systems, you know, which is enormous, you know, and they're not just Chapel Hill. They're all over the state, including, you know, Lenore, Goldsboro. I think they have a foot fingers on Onslow, you know, just a lot. They're all over the state. And Duke, which is not just Duke Hospital in Durham, you know, they have their fingers in other counties as well. They say that we need a children's hospital that specializes in nothing but children's diseases, okay? We have on the State House Health Committee, which initiates all of our health law in the House. You know, the Senate has a health committee as well. We have two physicians and a pharmacist, an RN. I mean, so we have some very sharp people when it comes to health care. And we have a retired CEO of a large health care system, Donnie Lambeth. They tell us that we don't need a standalone hospital to just take care of children. Now, some states do have them, but, they tell us we don't need it. The Senate says we do need it, and that Duke is telling us that we need it, and so we need to invest, depends on whose numbers you're looking at, in building a standalone hospital. And my reservation on building anything like that is the forward cost. You know, you can say, well, North Carolina can invest $150 million in into infrastructure for a hospital, the bricks and sticks, but
today, yeah.
Today, but then what happens moving forward? You know, do they come to us every year for $25 or $50 million?
Some kind of support, yeah.
But I do think that we can come to some resolution on that item, and we'll see what that is in the spring when we go back up.
But if I understand now, we're working on, again, the state's continuing resolution says we work based on last year's budget, and we do supplemental legislation as needed.
And that is correct. We're working on last year's budget, and we have, you know, we had to go back and tweak it, give more money to the hurricane recovery, et cetera.
Yeah. So from that point on, we've got we're working the way we didn't shut down. We're working the way that we have been working.
Now,
that's right.
I have a question when we come back. If they wanted to, could they tweak last year's budget and give the teachers the raise?
You could do a standalone bill and do that. That's not good, you know, policy to do that.
Okay.
You really need it in a budget because in the budget there'll be a lot of other items that go into public instruction mm-hmm. other than just the pay increases.
Okay.
Folks, on that, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, East 70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than East 70 Pond. Of course, East 70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. East 70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
A professional auto service keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Charlie, you wanted to ask a question. Yes. Actually, you asked it while we were on break, so let's go.
Steve, how is the education lottery doing as far as providing revenue to the state?
Well, I think it's doing a good job, I'll tell you, because I think that we put about $1 billion into the education K through 12, you know, from the education lottery. I mean, I can show it to you. I don't think. I see it right in the budget. Now, people say, you know, I think there's some distrust in anything the government does, and I don't blame people. You know, you should be skeptical of anything the government does because they're spending your money. But about half of the money goes towards payout. You know, so the revenue on the lottery is several billion dollars a year. Well, half of that they have to pay out. Okay, you know, to get people to play, and then a small percentage goes to the lottery commission itself that oversees it. It's not much. You know, it might be in the grand scheme of things, it might be $1 million. I'm just pulling that number out, which covers all the overhead of the people that have to look at this and make sure it functions correctly and all the website stuff. And then a small portion goes to the vendors that sell lottery tickets, you know, the convenience stores and any other place that you go in. They get a small cut out of it too, but about $1 billion of it goes into education. A lot of that goes into low wealth counties also, so that, like Jones County, they've got as much land as we do here in Craven, but most of it's agricultural land. How much developed land do they have? You know, Pamlico's a little bit more so, but you take Greene County and some of these smaller counties that are agricultural, then it really helps them out. But it goes towards a lot of other things, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, because they made a big deal of there was this drop in the revenue. Even though there was a total revenue increase,
yeah,
there was a drop in what was
what went. Yeah, remitted. And I have not. I do know, I think it was the state auditor that picked up on that.
I think Bullock
it was.
Did.
Yeah. And I probably need to call him and ask or send him an email and ask him to if he found any, you know, explanation for that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that happened this year that I think the House played a major role in was Shrimpgate. Do you want to talk about Shrimpgate for a minute?
Well, sometimes these things happen. They're unforced errors, in my opinion. But there was a bill that was put in, you know, it was a House bill. Was it 50? No.
I don't remember the number.
I can't remember. There's so many of them come through over your desk, you can't remember them all. But regardless, I know the guy very well that put it in because his office is a few from that. And it was going to increase the amount of harvest for recreational fishermen on, I think it was on flounder and speckled trout.
Yes.
You know, it's going to go from zero to maybe two limit per day or something like that. And so it passed, you know, pretty easily through the House, went over to the Senate, and somebody in the Senate, I'm pretty sure I know who it was, but they put a provision in there basically that excluded any shrimp trawling in the what I call the inner
within a half
inner
mile
waterways. Yeah.
Oh,
and so that's where 90% of their catch is, you know, within the rich harvest area of the, you know, intercoastal inside. And so and it also said that they would have to be a mile or was it a half mile?
Half mile offshore. Right and where the rocks begin.
And so, you know, Bobby Hanick and I think Senator Bobby Hanick and Senator Norm Sanderson There may have been one more. I'm not sure. Senate, you know, were the only senators, only Republican senators that voted against that change in the House bill, the amendment. And so it passed. And then, you know, the process would have been then it passed, their amended version of our bill passed. So then it still has to come over to the House for either a concurrence vote, you know, with our chamber, and for it to go to the governor for his vote, which I don't know how he would have voted on it. I never did find out how he felt about it. But so anyhow, Bobby and Norm fought very hard, but they were just swimming against the tide. And so I have to say, Keith, Representative Kidwell, Representative Cairns in the House, I'm talking about House members, Representative Phil Humphrey out of Onslow County, Representative Wyatt Gable out of Onslow County, myself, and I, you know, we rallied against that, and we had a lot of help because the fishermen, the commercial fishermen and the restauranters from down east, they showed up in mass.
There were over 800.
That's how you get people's attention. Because I'm not so sure if it wouldn't have passed in the House had they not come up in mass the way that they did, even though the representative I mentioned to you did a really good job.
There were over 800 people and, what, six trucks, I think, going?
Yeah, we were there, and we were given a list by someone who knew things of Republican representatives to go talk to. We had a list of about eight people that we needed to go talk to and say, please do not pass this.
And so I was running we call it the caucus meeting, when all the Republican members get together and we talk about bills and iron out differences. I was running the meeting because the majority leader was gone. And the speaker he said, look, I'm just here to listen. We're going to let this be however the House wants to vote is how we're going to do it. So we started out, and there was, I would say, close to half of the members in that House caucus that would have voted for that bill at the Senate version of our bill, you know, which would have excluded the shrimp. And so I think the first to speak, I called on, it was either Representative Kidwell or Representative Celeste Cairns, I can't remember which, and they spoke, and then the next one spoke, and then, a core group of about 12 that spoke adamantly against that. And between their really good speeches and what was outside of that
standing out, that standing
office
watching
there, which was, hundreds of commercial fishermen, it changed the flow.
Including bringing in, I believe, I can't remember the Democrat representative's name that was really aligned on this issue, maybe not anything else, but this one issue.
She lives in Greensboro, Pricey Harrison,
Yes.
But she spends almost all of her time down in Beaufort, and she just, talks to the fishermen and the people in the
restaurants. That would have crippled the economy in eastern North Carolina. And I did find out later, I haven't researched this, but it makes sense, that the move to stop the inshore shrimpers, there was a lot of money that came in from a frozen shrimp company in Virginia.
I'd not heard that, but that's how some things happen like that. I can tell you that. So
yeah, that was. I don't remember. I don't have a source on that, but I remember hearing that there was a frozen shrimp company in Virginia that was giving a lot of money to campaigns and whatever. Unfortunately, that's the way it works sometimes.
Right. But it's something that will probably come up again at some point in time. So we just have to.
So we have to be careful.
Yeah, the fishermen need
office
to be organized. Yeah,
they are organized because I can remember years ago, I think Charlie was with me down at Union Point Park.
Mm-hmm.
And the trawlers were out in the water and they were meeting over at the convention center because, again, they were being targeted.
Mm-hmm.
I think by some, like a some guy that was environmental in another part of the state that seemed to have some objection to what they were doing. I don't know, but I think they're probably pretty well organized.
Well, we watched in Massachusetts, we watched federal and state regulations put generations of Portuguese fishermen out of business. And I didn't move to North Carolina to see that happen here.
Well, you know, some of the things we know, I'm far from being an expert on commercial fishing or shrimping, but we do know that the shrimp that are caught in the United States, particularly in North Carolina, are well, you know, vetted and they're healthy. And some of the catch that comes from overseas, you can't say that because it's not, they don't have the, you know, health regulations and the people that, you know, that look at catch as it comes in, you know, look at a certain amount. So you don't know what you're getting when you're eating.
No, some of it's injected
China
with
or
things.
Vietnam or
it's injected
else.
With things.
We remember Walmart was got radioactive shrimp.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
that? Right. I remember
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
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 So that was not good. So any other highlights?
Well, I'm going to send you a link to a list of all the legislation that was passed and signed by the governor. I think he vetoed, I think it was 14, 15 bills, and we overrode all of them, I think, but five or six. So, and if we didn't, if they didn't come to the floor for an override, we didn't have the votes.
Yeah, the concealed carry is the one. Or the constitutional carry is the biggest one that has
that's
not
the
made.
One I get emails on practically every day.
Yeah. Well, the primary election is in March. Voting starts mid-February. And the midterm election or the off-year election, all of the representatives have to run every 2 years, right?
Right.
Does the Senate run every 2 years?
Yep. Yes.
Yep, they do.
So who you vote for is important because there are issues that will directly affect Eastern North Carolina, such as the shrimp thing if it comes up again, and generally budget issues, the tolls on the ferries. These are all things that will impact Eastern North Carolina.
And again, from our perspective with the radio show, get yourself educated on the candidates out there. Call them, ask them questions.
And we will be putting out a candidate questionnaire on cctaxpayers.com as we get into the election season, where you can look up a candidate and see their answers to the questions. And if they get elected, you can compare their answers to the questions with what they do, which is even more interesting.
Okay. Well, folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. I think the question I'm going to ask is, Steve, on the way back, is do you see any differences now that we're in, quote, District 1 instead of District 3? But right now, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters, and thank you for, again, listening to the radio show. Steve, I planted that one question about, is there any effect that we have when swapping from District 3 to District 1?
Well, I think the biggest impact that I've seen so far is Greg Murphy is so disappointed, Congressman Murphy. He really loved Craven County, and he loves Carter County. And he was not happy about losing those. But he understands why that was done. And so we've got some good candidates. You know, Representative Hanek is a really good candidate, in my opinion. Bobby's one of the hardest workers I've ever seen in my life. And I know, you know, if he makes it, he'll do a good job. Asa Buck, I could say similar things for him. Asa's no doubt a conservative, and he's going to toe the conservative line. There's Eric Rouse, I think, is running. He's a county commissioner from Lenore County. Eric is a, you know, conservative. Now, he technically doesn't live in this district, but you don't have to live in the congressional district that you run in. And as a matter of fact, there's someone running from up around Greensboro, I think.
Laurie Buchholz.
Yeah. Now, Laurie is in the district. She ran last time against
in District 1.
The incumbent. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She ran the last time and got beat only by about 3,000 or 4,000 votes, I think. So I guess she felt like she was close last time that, you know, she wins the primary, that she's got a even better chance this time because the district was drawn in such a way that it's definitely favorable towards Republicans. That's the way it was drawn. And that was very controversial. Should you draw districts? Well, the Constitution allows you to draw a congressional district anytime the legislature wants to. That is a state legislature decision.
I think one of the biggest differences this time around was that the court agreed this one is not drawn based on racial makeup.
Mm-hmm. You cannot draw congressional lines based on race, as you know. The U.S. Supreme Court decided that, I think, last year.
The other change that this, to me, that this represents is that Craven County represents a very large percentage of the population in this new district. So we are going, our votes are going to play a major role in who wins this election. My advice, again, CCTA cannot endorse candidates, but this is one where you really want to do your homework. You want to do your research.
One of the things that's very interesting to me is this district constitutes 25 of the 100 counties in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. And if you look at the district, I actually like the district. If you look at the map for District 1, it's really drawn so that the people in eastern North Carolina, particularly the ones that are on the coast or like us, you know, in Pamlico, you might as well be on the coast, are all kind of consolidated. So we have similar interest in waterways, in agriculture, and all that. So the way it was drawn before, it was not, I would say, this is actually a better map to me.
Well, I felt, after being here a couple of years, I don't claim to understand North Carolina politics at all. But one of the things that I learned fairly early from being, because we made many trips to the State House with the CCTA, was that Eastern North Carolina is something like the redheaded stepchild of the North Carolina legislature. We don't necessarily get sometimes the hearing that other areas of the state get. And this redistricting will give us, at least in the U.S. House, that hearing.
Oh, I agree. And I think that whoever shakes out is on the Republican ticket, we'll have a good candidate that conservatives can get behind.
Yeah, very good.
We don't know who that's going to be right now. Okay.
Do we know where we're going next?
Yes, we do.
We do.
I think one of the things that we need to talk about, because it was certainly a major event, was what happened in Venezuela over the weekend. The interesting part of that to me was that evidently all of the Chinese radar and defensive electronics...
And the Russian air defense.
What happened?
We blew it up.
It didn't do its job.
Well, not after we blew it up.
And Madero was protected by Cubans.
32 Cubans, we killed them all.
Not Venezuelans, Cubans.
Right.
Gosh. Elite forces, yes.
You have to understand the relationship between Venezuela and Cuba. Venezuela has been giving Cuba oil for free for years. And now when Trump says Cuba will be the next to fall, because in about a month they'll be out of gas. So if the people rise up, they can't use any of their toys to go chase them down. They don't have any gas. China now has an instability in its oil supply, so they may decide whatever their timeline was for invading Taiwan,
that's going to
they
be
may decide
off.
Back. And now the mullahs in Iran are coordinating their escape route to Moscow. So
this
Trump,
was a domino.
Trump pulled the right string to unravel that unholy trinity there. And he deserves big props, as does our military, because hit it and quit it is his, you know, way of dealing with this thing. Maduro was just in the panic room. He was running into the panic room, and we got the door before he could close it.
And this was done at a time when there was a Chinese delegation visiting.
Right.
Which made it even more interesting.
Well, Hezbollah's over there, too.
Yes. Well, that's been Hezbollah's South American quarters. And, of course, Iran is supporting Hezbollah, which might be a problem now in terms of money and other such things.
Well, Hezbollah builds Venezuela builds the drones for Hezbollah in Venezuela.
Okay.
So... Yes, yeah, so it's been a very interesting.
It was a real kingpin type thing in terms of what was pulled out.
Well, we're recording on Wednesday.
Yes.
And there's even that quote tanker that re-signified itself as Russian.
Reflagged itself.
Reflagged. We've now boarded it.
Yeah, we've got two.
Yeah.
We got one in the Caribbean and one in the North Atlantic.
And the one in the North Atlantic had a defensive force around it. Which watched us take it.
Which included a Russian submarine.
Yes, and they watched us just take it.
Right. So
the question is this 4D chess or 5D chess? We don't know what five-dimensional chess is.
It's the Donroe Doctrine.
The Donroe Doctrine,
yes.
As opposed to the Monroe Doctrine.
Yes.
You know, there's got to be so much going on, because I also know Venezuela has something to do with the voting machines.
Oh, yes.
Automatic.
And hiring these... experts to come up with this thing, and I believe that's how Maduro, is that his name, got in there.
Yes. And that's probably how Biden got in there,
too. So there's probably all kinds of chess plays in this game that's going on.
Yes, we're going to find out some more about Smartmatic.
Yes.
And it was also hilarious to me. Schumer was complaining that Congress wasn't told, and he was complaining... I've got to find the quote, but he said something to the effect of, I've been asking in the SCIF for months. If we were going to invade Venezuela, and they kept on saying no. And there was an ex post that said, if he's talking about things that were going on in the SCIF, maybe that's the reason they didn't tell him.
Wasn't he the one that a few years ago, when President Trump was in office before...
He
complained
criticized
that he didn't
him
get him
for not getting Maduro.
Right.
There was also, was it $25 million bounty on Maduro?
$25 million
yep.
bounty.
$25 million
set by Biden.
Yes.
So why did they put that there if they didn't want him?
Right.
And actually, what is it? The Babylon Bee took advantage of that and said Biden owes Trump $25 million
dollars. Well, the distinction they're making when people say, well, was this legal? Was it constitutional? The government although they're putting out a mixed message because he says, we're running it now, we're taking their oil, which sounds like an invasion, even though we didn't leave any people behind. But they're making a distinction between capturing somebody who's been indicted so that it was a law enforcement operation, not a military operation. The military was there to protect the law enforcement people. Right. So that's the distinction they're making. This was not a military action. It was a law enforcement action.
And these were funds that were owed to the United States because they nationalized our oil?
Yeah, Chevron oil.
Well, the interesting part of that, too, is that when they nationalized the oil rigs, they didn't know how to run them. And Venezuela right now is running at about 17% of what it's capable of in oil production. As soon as we get the right people down there and get the stuff up and running, we're talking about serious oil.
I'd hate to see the maintenance records.
Well, the other part of this, too, is the heavy crude, which is the Venezuelan oil. We have been refining, but we've been getting it from Canada. So Canada is losing a market, is going to gradually lose its market for the heavy crude that we have been refining. So there's, I mean, the implications of this, the dominoes.
It was brilliant. It's brilliant.
I saw something that I believe to be accurate. I believe it was in 1948 or 9 that the GDP per capita in Venezuela was number 4 in the world, behind the United States, New Zealand, and one other country. And so, they've really taken a hit under the communist dictatorship.
Yeah, it took one generation.
Does for you.
Took one generation to totally destroy the economy of the country.
Well, they've been experiencing the warmth of collectivism, as Mamdani would say.
And we have friends that I know their parents had apartment buildings down in Venezuela, and the question would become, will they be able to get their property back or not? We don't know. We have no idea. Anything else? No, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. this Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina. Pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Thank you again for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you want to take us in a different direction?
Yeah, I want to talk just briefly about the shooting in Minnesota by ICE. Minnesota is a blue state. The governor and the mayor of Minnesota of
Minneapolis
are hostile to ICE, and they've made no mystery of it. And I was listening to Clay and Buck on my way here, and apparently the ICE was out there. You know, they've surged ICE agents, 2,000 ICE agents to Minnesota, and they were out doing an operation, and they got stuck in the snow. So they were out of their cars trying to push a car out of the snow, and this woman in an SUV decided to run over one of them. And according to the video, as her SUV made contact with the ICE agent, he fired his weapon, and it ended up killing her. So the mayor is calling for charges against the ICE agent. The mobs are starting to appear.
The paid for mobs.
Of course, yeah.
Yes.
Although I guess it's really, really cold there. So they were speculating that maybe the National Guard wouldn't have to be called because the size of the crowds would not be George Floyd size. Remember Tim Walz's wife said she left the windows open because she liked to smell the burning tires from the George Floyd uprising.
Remember that.
Yeah. So that maybe the crowds won't be as big because it's really cold and snowy. And that may be true, but Clay and Buck were talking about whether or not the state was going to try to prosecute the ICE agent and whether or not the ICE agent would be able to exercise his federal immunities and have the case, once it's filed, transferred to federal court, which is an option available to him because he's a federal agent. And they said, well, they may get a blue-haired moonbat judge that says no. And so he says the Trump administration is going to have to pull out all the stops not to leave this man behind on the field, and was pretty sure that would happen, and I'm pretty sure of that, too. But it's going to be a goat rope.
Do you have the right to defend yourself if somebody's trying to run you over?
Right. But Jacob Frey, the mayor, said, don't believe the propaganda machine. His defense that she hit him is BS. So he's prejudicing the public against this guy's defense, which makes it difficult to seat a jury that's, you know, impartial.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to take a long time, and it's going to be a lot of he said, she said.
And the mayor and the governor need to take responsibility for their rhetoric that would motivate somebody to run over an ICE agent.
They won't.
I mean, they're always accusing President Trump of his rhetoric.
Right.
Well, what's good for the goose is good for the
government. Well, Jacob Frey already set his hat at, we're going to prosecute this guy. Walt's office came out and said, we're going to have a full investigation.
Oh, what else do they have?
Yeah.
And Minnesota has some other problems right now with some government money that might have been misdirected and misspent.
To the child care?
Just a little.
But, you know, the thing here, this involves grants. Somebody wrote those grants. Somebody signed those grants. Somebody signed off on those grants. And somebody signed the checks.
They've been having whistleblowers come out of the woodwork since 2018.
Yes.
And the state has chosen to take action against the whistleblowers to punish them instead of fixing the problem, because the Democrats rely on the 100,000 Somalis as a voting bloc.
And the money that went to some of the money that went to the daycare centers, et cetera, was winding up in Democrat campaign coffers.
And it was also going out the airport in suitcases.
And going to Al-Shabaab.
Yeah. But The article I read this morning said there had been an audit report by one of their state agencies that said that they had discovered that the state administrators were creating and backdating documents to cover up the fraud. And so their question to themselves was, if we found out about the ones they did fabricate, maybe there's other documents in the system that we don't know they fabricated. And so it's going to be a deep dive.
There was also a situation where a daycare center was mysteriously robbed and all they took was their records.
Right.
Yeah, but also, remember, that daycare center, this would make a great movie, a grade B or grade C movie, but a great movie, because there was a hole cut in the wall for them to get in and get these records. The problem is the hole was cut from the inside with a with a saw. So, I mean, based on the way the cut was done, it was done.
You know, in criminal justice, we have a saying, we only catch the dumb ones.
Well, that reminds there. Anybody remember Columbo? He solved a murder because the murder victim's sneakers were tied from the other person rather than the direction that the person wearing them had been tied. You know, that was one of his... one more thing.
Yeah.
But the Department of Health and Human Services has frozen a lot of child care and assistance money for California, Colorado, Illinois, Minnesota, and New York because of fraud concerns. Now, there are honest people that are going to be hurt by this. Mm-hmm. But my hope is that the real charitable organizations and the churches can pick up some of the slack in terms of food distribution and things like that.
Well, I don't know about that. The Catholic Charities have been part of the NGO problem with bringing illegals into the country for years.
But most of our cities now have reasonable food banks. And things like Samaritan's Purse and Operation Blessing and the Red Cross and what's the other one? There are some other ones that the Salvation Army can come in these situations and help. We used to do it that way.
Well,
we used to do it without the government.
There's no need to worry about hot meals for children if there aren't any children.
This is true.
So, you know, let's mitigate our pity. The fact that we don't have any victims. There's no victims other than we, the taxpayers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how could this go? This has been going on for years.
2018 whistleblowers. So Waltz, I think, got out of his reelection bid because he can foresee that he's going to be working full time on keeping his butt out of prison.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's
couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And I want to ask Kamala, so you vetted the guy for vice president and you missed this?
Mm-hmm. Well,
nah.
That's a whole nother thing.
Yeah. Steve, I want to interject one other crazy thing because a couple of weeks ago you had the opportunity to go out to Arizona for Turning Point USA. Can you give us a quick synopsis of that?
Well, I'll tell
you. That was a huge event.
Yeah, I went out there with a couple of other couples that are friends of ours that they have teenage children. They went with us, and I came back a refreshed conservative. I'll tell you that, to see 20 or 30,000 young people in their teens, some maybe be in their early 20s. They're out there. They're dressed, you know, really nice, so polite. And listening to the great conservative voices in the United States, because I think anybody that's a well-known conservative voice was out there at that convention during one of the 3 or 4 days. And it just, you know, it was a breath of fresh air for me to see so many young people that espouse the conservative values, family values and all. And so... a lot of people came away from that just like I did, that, you know, with a renewed spirit on confidence in our young people. So I think sometimes we beat up on, you know, the younger generations. They I feel pretty good. And really, the main point was that Charlie Kirk made an incredible difference. And Turning Point USA is strong now. In some ways, they may be stronger just due to the amount of new chapters that are forming on the college campus. As a matter of fact, Eric Smith, Carmen Smith's daughter, is forming one at Wake Forest. She's a freshman at Wake Forest this year. But he made a tremendous impact in this country, and his name will live on forever and ever. Hopefully, we can find somebody that's, you know, as bright and energetic and with the vision that he had to keep it going, you know.
Now, that was a political event, but was it a spiritual event also?
It was. There were certainly some ministers there that were preaching from the pulpit, more or less. But it was a spiritual awakening, too, in some ways. It was faith-based, Christian-based. Obviously, Turning Points is open to ideas of all religions and all political persuasions. But at the end of the day, their message is conservative values. Christianity is what made the country strong and what will keep it strong.
I think what we've noticed from there is that that Charlie Kirk had always wanted just to have the dialogue.
Yeah.
You weren't a confrontation. You were having a dialogue, and you needed to express why you had a certain belief. And I think that comes through, and we hope that the press will understand we need not to just form sides. We need to form dialogues.
Well, speaking of the Judeo-Christian foundation for our system of government and our national values, I think we need to pay some attention to Mom Donnie's director of tenant relations or whatever her title is, who said that after Mom Donnie said, we need to leave the coldness of rugged individualism for the warmth of collectivism. And she said that home ownership is a form of white supremacy and that white people are going to be impacted the most when they learn to share the equity in their homes, that we need to start thinking about home equity as a collective good and not an individual good. That's horrible. And Harmeet Dhillon, who is the head of the Civil Rights Division of the DOJ for Trump, said, well, here's your notice. Try it. Just try it. We'll see you in court.
Well, the interesting part of that, too, is that her mother owns a $1 million-plus house in Nashville. Is she going to share that, too?
Well, her mother, it's interesting, this Sia Weaver, whatever her name is, she hasn't had a job. Her parents have been supporting her as an adult. And so she
has no idea.
She's clueless. She's just a nepo baby who grew up in the lap of luxury. Her parents have been sending her checks
her
whole life.
Well, that's the same as Mam Dami.
She had a meltdown this morning when faced with the media.
Yeah, the media tried to ask her, so what do you have to say about your mom's $1.4 million home? And she burst into tears and ran away. So,
okay.
Mom Donnie,
qualified leadership, anybody?
It's gonna be an interesting show to watch Mom Donnie and his posers trying to seize the means of production
in New York City. New York City collapsed in the 70s and was bailed out by some very wealthy realtors who paid their taxes early because Gerald Ford said, no, we're not bailing you out. I hope Trump has the same gumption that says, no, we're not bailing you out.
Folks, on that, I think we're going to have to wrap the show up. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call. You have a happy new year.